This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The person accused of killing Anna Kempner is working a landscaping job right now, by the way, in case you were playing along at home with this. That is where this case stands. A 16-year-old facing first-degree murder and aggravated abuse charges in federal court, accused of killing and SAing his own stepsister aboard a Carnival cruise ship. And his pretrial release conditions were recently amended to allow him to leave his uncle's home and work at his biological father's landscaping business. He wears a GPS ankle monitor. He's supervised by an adult. When he leaves the house, he lives with a relative in Hernando County, Florida. And according to his own defense attorneys, in a filing submitted to the court, he has complied with every condition that was set for him. Anna Kempner's body was found under a bed aboard the Carnival Horizon, wrapped in a blanket, concealed beneath life jackets. Not exactly accident, if you're, you know, reading the tea leaves. The Miami-Dade Medical Examiner ruled her death a homicide by medical asphyxiation. Her airway was physically blocked. Reporting on the investigation described bruising on her neck consistent with an arm held across. She was 18 years old. She was a high school cheerleader in Titusville, Florida. She planned to join the Navy after graduation. And according to multiple people who knew her, she did not want to go on that cruise. She told people she reportedly didn't want to be on that ship. And now the person accused of killing her in a lock cabin aboard that ship is entering a not guilty plea in federal court. Not in person, not standing before a judge, but through a one-page document filed by his attorney. He signed it and waived his right to appear at the arraignment. One page. That's what that moment looked like. On a piece of paper submitted from a distance while the family of the girl found dead under a bed waits for a system that still hasn't decided whether the accused should even be in custody. And it's all part of the same system because her family is his family. At least by marriage now. Anna's father, Christopher Kempner, has not been quiet about where any of this stands. He told reporters he wants to see the accused in an orange jumpsuit. He called him a danger to the public. He said the family is placing trust in the justice system, but that they are deeply troubled, that despite the seriousness of the charges, the accused has not taken and been taken into custody. That's the victim's father speaking. He's also the accused stepfather. He married Timothy Hudson's mother, Chantel, in December of 2024, less than a year before the cruise that was supposed to bring the newly blended family together. Anna shared a cabin on that ship with Timothy and her 14-year-old half-brother. According to Anna's ex-boyfriend, that younger brother heard yelling and violent sounds coming from inside the locked stateroom the night before Anna's body was discovered. Ship surveillance reportedly showed one person entering and exiting the cabin. The warning signs didn't start on the ship. The ex-boyfriend's father alleged to Inside Edition that the accused was fixated on Anna, that he was infatuated with her, that he always wanted to date her despite being always her stepbrother, and that he always carried a large knife, too. During a FaceTime call, according to the ex-boyfriend's account, the ex-boyfriend watched the accused come into Anna's room while she was sleeping and climb on top of her. He said he tried to warn Anna's parents, and according to him, they didn't believe it. That was before the cruise. Before the cabin, before any of this, someone raised a flag, and the people in a position to act on it reportedly said, "Nah." After Anna's death, the family's response became its own story. Her obituary was edited after it was published. The stepfather's name was removed. A reference to her father's second wife, Tabitha Kempner, was taken out entirely. The current version lists Anna's biological mother is Heather Wright. Reference to the Donahue family was also removed. The people closest to Anna were rewriting the public record in real time, even in the death announcement. That tells you something about how this family was processing what happened, or how they wanted the public to see it anyway. For months, almost everything the public learned about this case came not from the FBI, which refused to comment on an active investigation, but from a custody battle between Timothy's mother and his biological father, Thomas Hudson. Those family court filings became the only window into what happened on board that ship. Through them, the public learned that Timothy had been identified as a suspect, that he was on medication for ADHD and insomnia, and reportedly hadn't taken his insomnia medication for 2 nights on the cruise. That, after the ship returned to Miami, he was transferred to a medical facility, and that, in text messages between his parents, his mother wrote that he kept repeating he couldn't remember anything. The custody dispute has created its own collateral damage. Thomas Hudson, the accused biological father, has filed for sole custody of the accused 9-year-old sister, arguing that he should not be living in a household connected to these allegations. That means the accused's own father is using the case to reshape the custody arrangement. Meanwhile, Christopher Kempner, Anna's father, who is also Timothy's stepfather, is caught in an impossible situation. He lost his daughter. The person charged with killing her is his wife's son, and he is publicly calling for that person to be locked up while still, by law, connected to the family that produced him. That blended family that was supposed to come together on that cruise is fractured along every possible line. He can't remember anything. But someone wrapped Anna's body in a blanket. Someone placed her under a bed. Someone covered her with life jackets. That's not a scene that happens by accident or in a blackout. The alleged concealment of Anna's body suggests awareness of what occurred and a deliberate effort to delay rediscovery. Those two realities, the claim of no memory and the physical evidence of calculated concealment, are going to sit at the center of whatever happens at a trial. Federal prosecutors filed sealed charges in February under the Juvenile Delinquency Act. Timothy surrendered at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Miami, appeared before Magistrate Judge Edwin Torres, and pled not guilty. Prosecutors argued he was a danger and should be detained. The judge, he disagreed. Released him to family members without bond and set conditions. He walked out of a federal courthouse, accused of murdering his stepsister, and went to live with his uncle. Then the defense made a move that nobody expected. Unsealed court records show that on February 23rd, Timothy Hudson, with the advice of his 3 federal public defenders, signed a written waiver requesting to be prosecuted as an adult, not accepting the transfer, requesting it. He waived his right to a hearing. He waived his right to appeal. His attorneys co-signed. A 16-year-old voluntarily asked to be moved into a system where the maximum penalty is life in federal prison. Whatever the defense is building, they believe it works better than adult court. That's a calculated beat, and it's one the public is only beginning to understand. A federal grand jury returned a superseding indictment on March 10th, 2 counts, first-degree murder, alleging both premeditated killing and killing during the commission of an aggravated SA. An aggravated SA itself, alleging the accused used physical force. The indictment was formally unsealed on April 10th when the case transferred to adult court. For the first time, the public saw what the government had been constructing behind sealed doors for months. 3 days after the unsealing, the U.S. Attorney's Office announced the indictment and simultaneously filed a motion to revoke Hudson's release. The government's position is that the juvenile release order no longer holds because this is now an adult prosecution under the Federal Bail Reform Act. They want him detained. They want him locked up before trial. They already lost this argument once in that February hearing. They're asking the court to try again. The defense isn't backing down. They filed a response arguing compliance with every condition, GPS monitoring, adult supervision, no unsupervised contact with minors. And they made one very specific ask: send the detention rehearing back to Magistrate Judge Torres, the same judge who heard the February evidence, the same judge who released him. The defense wants the referee who already ruled in their favor making that call again. That's not random, that strategy. And while the two sides fight over whether the accused should be free. The prosecution has quietly turned over its entire evidence file. The complete medical examiner's report, which the ME's office has refused to release publicly. Body cam footage from the federal authorities boarded the ship at Port Miami, and a cell phone data extraction from a phone identified in court documents only as belonging to CK. Prosecutors haven't publicly identified who that is. Anna's father is Christopher Kempner, though. CK. If the government pulled data from the victim's father's phone and handed it to the defense as discovery, that tells you the investigation didn't stop at the cabin door. It reached into the family itself. What's on that phone and why the government considered it relevant enough to extract and disclose? Those are questions that don't have public answers yet. Now, consider the trial itself. Prosecutors have estimated it would take approximately 7 days. That's it. 7 days for first-degree murder and aggravated SA aboard a cruise ship in international waters. That's a government that believes its physical evidence tells a tight, contained story. Surveillance footage, medical findings, the state of the cabin, what was found, where, and how is, and how it was concealed. If the prosecution thinks a week is enough to present its case, the question isn't whether they have evidence, it's what's in that file that makes them that certain. And if the defense reviewed the same file and still entered a not guilty plea, they believe there's something in there that they can fight. The Speedy Trial Act gives government 70 days from indictment to bring the case to trial, unless the defense waives that clock. In practice, federal defense teams almost always request continuances. The timeline from here is uncertain, but what's not uncertain is that a detention hearing is coming. A judge is going to have to decide whether the accused stays free or goes into custody while the case moves forward. And if that judge orders detention, nobody has publicly addressed the question that sits underneath all of it. Where does a 16-year-old prosecuted as an adult in federal court actually go? It doesn't fit cleanly into juvenile facilities under adult prosecution. Putting a minor in an adult federal detention center raises its own set of legal and safety concerns. The system that's protecting this case doesn't have an obvious place to hold the person at the center of it. That's not a footnote. That's a reflection of how unprecedented this case is and how many questions remain unanswered even as the legal machinery moves forward. Obviously, he's presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. That's a constitutional right, and it holds regardless of what the evidence looks like from the outside. But the distance between not guilty and a not guilty plea filed on paper and anything that resembles accountability for what's happened in that cabin is still measured in hearings that haven't been held, decisions that haven't been made, and a trial date that hasn't been set. The evidence is in. Both sides have it. The plea is entered, and Anna Kempner's family is watching a process grind forward while the person charged with her murder lives under conditions that most people on standard probation would recognize. Anna Kempner was known as Anna Banana. Her obituary described her as bubbly, outgoing, and someone who never had a filter. And that was part of her charm. She sent random I love you messages to the people in her life. She loved the sun and the water and boat days and beach days. She was baptized in May of 2025. She wanted to continue cheerleading at the University of Georgia. She wanted to join the Navy and eventually become a canine police officer. She was months from graduation when she boarded that ship. She had a life mapped out ahead of her, and every piece of it was taken in a locked cabin in the middle of the ocean. None of that brings her back. But whether the system has anything meaningful left to offer her, that answer is still pending. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give us your feedback. Should he be free working a landscaping job after charges like this? Yeah. We'll continue the conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.